Last week, I suggested to you that in former times, communication was less of a problem because there was less of it. And I think this can be demonstrated very simply in a number of ways. For example, if you look at medieval maps, you will see cities that are drawn in rather than simply dots on a medieval map. You've all seen them. And you'll see a city that that is drawn in as a sort of series of towers and so forth. And this is Hamburg, or this is Rome, or whatever city it might happen to have been. And then somewhere else on the map, you'll see another city drawn in. And in between, you might see a bit of a road, sort of a line connecting them like this. But the one thing that's remarkable about such maps is that the cities themselves, which are little miniature drawings of the real city, are entirely out of proportion to the spaces that separate the cities. They're very large, they're blown up. And the spaces that separate them are very small. Because maps in the Middle Ages, as you know, were not quantified in the way that maps are today. When you actually take a ruler and say, now this, you know, a quarter of an inch equals 1 mile, then you've got to reduce the scale of the cities according to the space that separates them. This was not the case. And in fact, what does this mean? I think it really means that at that time, you had communities of people who were living together, small communities of people who were living together, and had some vague notions of other communities of people living somewhere over in that direction or somewhere over there. Very little apprehension of how far they were away or what they did over there or what the space was like that separated you from those communities, and very little interest in them. And you'll notice, especially if you look at maps that were, say, printed in Leipzig, that Leipzig will be much bigger than any of the other cities. You know, they will be a sort of a cluster around Leipzig, which is the center of the world. So I think that this is one way you can see in which people lived in smaller groups and were very much tied up with their own small community, because they had immense fortifications around these cities, you know, and everything that went on inside was quite orbital. It was quite centripetal. You were very much concerned with the forces in the center of the city, but really not very much concerned with the world at large, and things outside. There were also other things that tended to keep people apart. One was class distinction. You know, there were all, well, I don't have to give you a resume of class distinction in feudal times, or various other ways in which people were separated from one another. You had, I mean, even in Athens, for example, which is supposed to be the heart of democracy, you had maybe a handful of people who were wandering around the Lyceum, around Socrates and Aristotle, and called themselves philosophers, and they didn't communicate with anybody other than themselves, I don't think. And you had maybe a few hundred citizens of Athens who were free citizens. And these people met and communicated over the public affairs of Athens, but they didn't communicate with the slaves that they kept. They didn't communicate with people outside of Athens. And you had maybe a few thousand people who spoke the Greek language and who communicated with one another because they had a language in common. And you know the word that they had for everybody else who didn't speak Greek? Barbarian. This is where our word barbarian comes from. Which indicates, I think, pretty much that they were not very concerned with people who didn't speak Greek. Or that they felt that they were inferior in some way. And in the Middle Ages, too, again, you have not only this enormous sort of stratification of class distinction that tended to keep people separate, or at least in separate groups, but it was possible for a person to escape society very easily. And Last night I was just browsing in reading, looking more or less for something that might illustrate to you the way in which, say, a monk in the Middle Ages was escaping reality and did not really wish to communicate with other human beings. Perhaps he wished more to communicate with God or to communicate with nature or with himself, but not with other human beings. And here's a very short passage, but it illustrates it perfectly, I think. "Whoever therefore, as a monk, hastens to attain the height of perfection, let him confine himself within the walls of his cloister. Let him love spiritual quiet. Let him have a horror of running about in the world, as he would of immersing himself in a pool of blood. For the world is more and more every day polluted by the contamination of so many crimes that any holy mind is corrupted by the mere consideration of it." So there's a very strong thinking there that one should escape the problems and not sort of plunge into them and try and solve them. And you didn't have to communicate with the whole world, you know. You could escape the whole world at that time. St. Thomas Aquinas, I think, said it would be a very good thing if many people spent their entire lives in contemplation. I wonder whether it was certainly possible in the Middle Ages. I wonder whether it's possible today to spend one's entire life in contemplation of the sort that St. Thomas Aquinas was talking, speaking.